145, members present. Moses, Holm, Kelly, Foster, Wyrock, and Stoltz substituting. Don't be dissuaded or attentive. I want everybody on their good behavior, even though somebody else might be identified with your identity here. Just some April Fool's tomfoolery. We have on the calendar, first item up is House Bill 25. There is a proposed CS, but we're not going to address that today. It's just to take public testimony. Is the sponsor of House Bill 25 here? To lead it off? Were they aware it was on the schedule today?
He's on his way.
Okay, I guess I thought they were here. I did an oversight. Joined by Representative Jewell. It's not a coup.
What's that? 20.
Oh, 20.
It's like short for cool. Cool.
It rhymes with
fool.
Andrew.
Capital T, right?
Sorry, jump the gun. We'll just stand at ease for a minute.
So we can leave now?
Yeah, apologize for the delay. The operating budget we do want to get to, but we'll wait for the co-chair, other co-chair to return from the meeting to go to that. So in the interim here, let's go ahead and here's some bills. First bill up is House Bill 25. I understand that the sponsor is here, Representative Seaton. If you want to join us, please. We have a few people to testify online. And, so Representative Seaton, welcome to House Finance, if you could tell us what this bill does, please.
Sure. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman of the Committee. House Bill 25 is addressing a change in the fisheries that's taken place over time. The raw fish tax, or the fisheries business tax, is basically 3% of the ex-vessel harvested value of the fish that is in charge. And then in 1980, the legislature decided that it wanted to support the infrastructure that develops this tax, and so it shares back to the communities 50% of the 3% tax for wherever the fish are processed. And what's happened is you know, years ago here, not very many years ago, all of the fishery was processed in Alaska. And what we've been doing through the legislature and through the industry is trying to promote higher value products. And a lot of times those higher value products are unprocessed by the definition that the Department of Revenue uses. So that if you have a troll caught fish that is gutted and gilled, and it's shipped out, that's unprocessed. And so what happens is then none of that tax that was generated comes back to that community. There's another section that then says that 50% of the tax that's generated goes to the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development for distribution broadly across the state to the 14 fishery management units based on the poundage of product that is processed. And so what we've been having is this displacement of the fishery tax that is generated in southeastern Alaska, south central Alaska, high value product that is then displaced to areas where the highest volume of fishery takes place, because that's the way the tax is distributed, instead of back to the places where that was generated. And so what this House Bill 25 does is says that for products that are landed in a municipality and then exported from the state, the port of landing will be the place that will get their share of the raw fish tax back. And this is there, again, to support the infrastructure, support the ports, support the fisheries that are generating the tax, generating the revenue for the state. And so, like I say, this has been a growing problem, because what's happened is the fisheries have actually grown away from our tax structure. And this is the cure now. Over in CRA, they decided that they wanted to hold small communities harmless, and so what they did was they put in a request that, or an amendment, so that cities under 500, municipalities under 500, or boroughs under 3,000 would still get the distribution of that tax to community and regional affairs. And so that's in there now, and that's the CRA version. You also have before you a committee substitute that I prepared for you. Basically what that does is says that 40% of the tax would continue to be distributed broadly by the old formula under CR, Community Commerce, Community and Economic Development, instead of directly back to the communities that generate the revenue. And so what we've done is put in an amendment there with the committee substitute that would say that when we establish municipal revenue sharing at the minimum level of $20,000 per community, then that would go away. And that was the whole thought behind this, was that the state has kind of eliminated community or municipal revenue sharing, and the loss of this tax that is shared from other areas to those communities would really hurt. And so this just takes that hold harmless clause away once we establish some form of community revenue with a minimum amount of $20,000.
Okay.
Happy to answer any questions.
Very good, Representative. Appreciate the orientation to your bill. I do want to hold off on adopting the CS just yet until we have more discussion and kind of get the pros and cons of the bill. Is there any questions? Representative Foster, what are you doing over there? Representative Jewell. you guys are playing the chair today on April Fool's Day.
Must be the day.
Yes, sir.
All right.
It's good thing I know your name, Representative Jewell.
Are there winners and losers in this, and if so, who are they?
Yes, there are. There are the places that are generating the revenue, that are generating the tax, that is our northern southeast, southern southeast, Prince William Sound, south central Alaska, that's, you know, my area, Homer, Kenai, Upper Cook Inlet, and Kodiak. All of those areas generate the this tax where we're doing exporting of unprocessed fish, and then the distribution of that tax, since it's based on poundage of processed fish, generally tends to go out west because of the large pollock fleet. The large Bering Sea pollock fleet and the cod fleet generates a huge amount of poundage, even if it is a low dollars per pound, low cents per pound. The formula is based on poundage. So all of those previous areas that have, that generate high value product and is exported fresh, is unprocessed fresh. That is, they all are, would be gainers under this because they would be getting back the sharing of the revenue that they generate. And the area that would lose would be Representative Moses District, Unalaska, predominantly because of the large poundage of product that they process that is the main factor in the distribution formula. When Department of Commerce and Economic Development separates and spreads that through that management district, they spread 50% of the tax that's going through commerce based on a per share or a per municipality basis, and the other 50% goes on a population basis. So there's a number of small communities that get a large share of that because it's that 50% is equally split among the communities within that fisheries management region. So it's based on the fishery management region, and wherever that large volume of product is in, that's where the tax goes.
Go ahead.
Is that what this fiscal note from Department of Revenue with the attachment on the second page, is that what that is showing, kind of two-thirds way down? Is that illustrating? That's component number 2476.
Let's see, where is this? Let me see which one.
It's
yes. The says Western Alaska, Southwest Alaska, South Central and Kodiak, and Prince William Sound and Southeastern. Yeah, it shows you the percentages that they are getting now. That's on the right hand side, and then under committee substitute for House Bill 25, it shows you the percentages there. So those are the percentages that they were getting, and you can see the impacts over on the right hand side where there's the two negative impacts and the others are the positive impacts. We had a sheet that breaks it down a little bit further, but the problem is that we can't, the Department of Revenue is here that can testify, but the problem is that they revenue bases all its numbers on tax returns, and unless there's three major seafood processors in a city, they won't tell us how much it is. We can tell you exactly how much is not going to go out to communities because that goes through a grant from Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development, but the same amount of money that will be distributed back to communities, we can't tell you. We can only do it by the area, by the broad areas. But these are generally correct. What's happening is Southeast Alaska has places like Craig down here where the gooey ducks are being harvested. It used to be gooey ducks were processed here, and now that they're being shipped live, they're worth three times as much. But none of the tax revenue comes back to the community that generates it. You have Homer and Seward areas where I represent. We have a lot of halibut that comes in that is then shipped down, you know, put in fiber totes and iced and is trucked down to British Columbia. Even though you have the port facilities there that generate that tax, none of the tax goes back to those ports. We have the gray cod that has been flown out every night to Korea, and it's whole, not even gutted. I mean, it's just dipped in a chlorine dip to meet DEC standards, and then it's flown out that night to Korea in 50-pound boxes. And none of that tax revenue comes back to the ports that generate that, even though this is going on all winter long. small boats coming in, delivering, using the facilities, using ice, et cetera, because it's exported unprocessed. If it was under a definition that was processed, then the tax revenue would go back to those ports that are generating that revenue. You also have, over in Bristol Bay, you have people now that are sending out fresh fish or gutted and gilled salmon during the summer. That goes away. That doesn't come back to those communities. It goes broadly into this formula where the greatest poundage is processed. You have Norton Sound king crab, as a lot of these crab are now going live to places. As soon as they leave and go live outside the state or unprocessed, then the community loses the tax revenue. And the same will probably happen over, with some stuff out in Alaska, as we have the rationalization of the Bering Sea crab. As more and more crab is flown out live at a high value dollar, then that revenue doesn't come back directly to the community, it goes into the formula. And you know, since the formula is weighted totally by poundage, not by value of product, then it does get distributed back, mostly back there, but not by virtue of being landed and being handled in that community.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. Thank you. Representative Stoltz, did you have a question?
I can just ask Mr. Chairman, general question. I don't understand commercial fish issues that well. I should, as many as when we get an opportunity to deal with by now, but it's, I guess I'll look at it just from a policy standpoint. Are you looking at this as a model? And I look at fish as one of our natural resources. We could start extrapolating this policy to other natural resources and how they're distributed. Do you see this as maybe some model legislation to evaluate other resource extraction, renewable and non-renewable, and redistribute it? Do you have any concerns about policy directions that might change? And is this... I like to be consistent when I do things, and I just want to, if I take a step forward, I like to make sure I step the same way the next time as best I can.
Sure, and Representative Stoltz through the chair. If I understand, I'm not quite sure I understand your question, but first of all, the policy has been established in Alaska that we tax the extracted value of the product 3%. Okay, that's the extracted value. And what the policy is in the state is that they're going to share half of that tax, that half of that 3% gross tax is what it is, back to the communities that are generating the revenue to help support the infrastructure. And so that's been the policy of the state. What's happened recently is that just because of the definition we have of processed by DOR means that if shrimp are headed, they're unprocessed. Okay, unless they're frozen. But if they're not frozen and they're headed, that's unprocessed. If you have a troll dress salmon, gutted and gilled, that's unprocessed. Now, if you ship that out, and we've been encouraging people to ship these products and make these high value products, but we have the reverse incentive of saying, okay, if you process it, GUIDEX, if you process them locally and have a lower value product, you get the tax, you get half of the tax. If you ship that fish out unprocessed, if you fish it, ship it out fresh, you lose your tax base. And so it's a reverse incentive for throughout that fishery. Now, I'd be perfectly willing to talk about mining taxes the same way. Unfortunately, we've got mining taxes that are based on the net profit instead of on the gross. I mean, if we wanted to go to a 3% gross extraction tax and say that we want to share back 1.5% of that to the community, that'd be great. I mean, if you're talking about other resources, I don't have a problem doing that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, sure. I just follow up briefly, and I'm just really trying to understand the philosophy in this. I truly don't understand the issue. But the infrastructure for the oil industry, if you look at all the bean counters and support for a lot of that's in Anchorage and Fairbanks, should there be, under this theory, should there be more of a redistribution of some of the... And I'm not trying to... I'm just only philosophical, Reggie. I'm not taking a stab. I'm just to try to see this as it compares to other things.
Well, and I think, I through the chair, I think we've done that in some of the stuff, because like on oil taxes, we tax the pipeline, we tax the production units, we tax those things. We've set a property tax value, and we let the local government take a portion of that, whatever they want to assess on the rest of their property. So we do that same kind of a offset sharing basis on some of the oil taxes as well.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Senator Stoltz. Any other questions for the sponsor? Okay, thank you, Representative Seaton. I think you might have mentioned this, and I was looking through the file here. What areas would be adversely impacted by this, and which areas benefit? Because it sounds like Representative Moses may not like this bill. But what about Kodiak and some of the other areas?
The areas that are generating the tax now that don't get it distributed back to them are Southern Southeast, Northern Southeast, Prince William Sound, Cook Inlet, and Kodiak are the areas that are generating the revenue that don't get the shared revenue back. The areas that get the revenue that would lose it under this plan would be Western Alaska and Southwest Alaska. And that, is mainly because of the huge pollock fleet. Because this is distributed on a poundage process basis, not on the value of the fishery.
Very good. Yeah, I'm like Representative Stoltz here. Fish is a whole different industry for me, so I'm learning. Okay, any other questions? If not, thank you. Yes, Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, if we could understand over, say, the last 5 or 10 years in the 2 5-year chunks, something has changed then. You used to get it and you don't now?
That's
good. Because of the change in what you're doing.
Through the chair, Representative Kelly, yes. What's happened is we've changed what we do with fish in Alaska. We have tried to get people to do higher value product, and the higher value product is generally fresh. And our tax structure was based on sharing the revenue back to where fish was processed. It's a fisheries business tax is based on where it was processed. And now we have two other categories. Basically, fish that are landed out in the state that are unprocessed, landing tax, and then we have the other section, which is fish that are landed in here but are exported unprocessed. And that's the part that has greatly increased. I mentioned gooey ducks. When gooey ducks were in Southeast and we were taking in and grinding them up and processing them and selling them, they were only worth a third of what they are live. So now what's happened is people are shipping out live gooey ducks from Southeast, from Sitka. You've had a very big industry based on rockfish, where you take these whole rockfish and you bring them in and they're iced and they're shipped out very fresh. Well, they're unprocessed. And we've passed in the last couple of years direct marketing of salmon. Those are troll-dressed salmon. Anything that's troll-dressed, which is gutted and gilled, leaves the community, leaves Juneau, leaves Sitka, Craig, any of these places, the tax doesn't come back to those places because it left the state unprocessed. And one of the big parts that for my community is halibut. Halibut comes in and it is brought in over the dock, with the individual fishing quotas. It used to be all the product was brought in a short period of time and processed here. And now what's happened is it's come in, it's gutted and gilled, it's thrown in big fiber totes, ice, and it's struck down to British Columbia, close to where where they process it and where they sell it right out of there. And it's a more valuable product. You can tell that halibut is up $3.30 a pound, but most of that is not being processed here. It's being exported very quickly, driven down in truck, which means that all of a sudden the communities that are supporting those fisheries do not see any of the revenue from their share of the fish tax because, again, it's exported unprocessed. So that's the difference.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Moses.
You mentioned salmon in Crystal Bay. When that fish is landed, there's a fish ticket made up. And most of the communities and local governments that tie up to the city.
Right, right.
Representative Moses, you don't speak very often, so we need to get a microphone in front of you so we can hear you.
Up to five, as high as 5% is applied to the value of the ticket. Now, I've got a list here of 28 communities that charge a fish tax, local fish tax, besides what the state charges, which varies anywhere from 1 to a total of 4%. Now, 17 out of the communities and local governments that charge that percentage are in my district, out of the 17 out of a total of 28 that have this raw fish tax. Now, wouldn't it be fair if the winners and under your bill went to a local fish tax rather than take away from other communities to get some additional revenue?
Through the chair, Representative, many of the communities that would be winners in this already do. You take Kodiak. Kodiak has a 925 mil severance tax on fisheries that are coming into there. The all of the fish that are come into, I'm trying to remember all the other communities. I don't have the list before me, but a lot of the communities that export unprocessed fish do have a local tax. What we have is we have a state tax, that we have a state philosophy that says that we are going to share back to the communities a 50% of that raw fish tax to support the infrastructure. And what's happened is within the state, we have supported high-value products, and that has grown those fish producers away from the tax structure, so that instead of putting that half of the raw fish tax back to the communities that produce that revenue, we're distributing it to other communities. And we're distributing it to those other communities based on the poundage that was produced of other kinds of fish there. And so generally it's going from a high value product, not getting the 3% on that high value product, and distributing it to the places that have a huge volume of low value product. And that's been what's happened, is the fisheries have grown away from the tax structure we had. But the philosophy of the state has been that we want to share back half of the raw fish tax to the communities that generate the revenue. And that's where it's been processed. That's where we originally, way back when, took the and said processing, because that's the way we handled all the fish. And now that we have been supporting and getting, you know, even requesting that communities do, you know, high value raw fish that are fresh, it's grown away from the tax structure. We still want to support those communities that are generating the revenue with that portion of the raw fish tax, but what we've done is the industry has grown away from that definition that we used of exported unprocessed. And we've looked at it in the past, changing the definition of where it's exported, but we're not wanting to get into a competition between an area that lands the fish and if in Alaska it's processed in another community, the raw fish tax still goes exclusively back to the community that processes the fish. All we're trying to do is get to those that fish that is landed and is exported from the state unprocessed. And this bill just says that if you land it in a municipality and you export it from the state unprocessed, then we'll consider that port of landing as if it was the point of processing, because there was no point of processing in the state.
Okay. Follow-up, Representative Moses?
Yeah. In the case of Homer, they don't have a local fish tax.
That's correct. There's not a local percentage fish tax there.
Doesn't that give Homer an unfair advantage in the marketplace?
Well, I'm not sure what... Well, I mean, it's like saying that since Anchorage doesn't have a sales tax, they have an unfair advantage in the marketplace. What we're talking about in this bill is we have a state fisheries tax, which we have
a policy that we're going to share 50% of that fish tax back to the communities that generate the revenue. And the problem that we're addressing here is that the way the definitions work, we are no longer doing it. Because I don't think anybody in Unalaska claims that they should be getting Craig's gooey duck fish tax that is generated from Craig because they are now exporting live gooey ducks. I mean, but that's what's happening because of the definitions we're using, because we're using the definition of poundage for the distribution of that fish tax instead of sharing it back with Craig, which is generating that revenue. You could say the same thing about the cod that we deliver and fly out fresh out of Seward on Korean Airlines every night. That doesn't go back to support the facilities in Seward because it's exported unprocessed, even though it's handled there, even though it's boxed there, even though it's using the cranes and the port facility and all. It's just because of the definition of exported unprocessed. And that's the whole change. I mean, this isn't pitting one community against another. It's saying we have a state philosophy of sharing 50% of the raw fish tax to the communities that generate the revenue. And what we're doing in this bill is just saying that whether it's exported unprocessed, it's still generated in those communities, can be identified to those communities, and should be shared back to those communities.
First, I maintain that places don't have a raw fish tax on a local level do have an economic advantage in the marketplace. And granted, we've had a system of fishery taxes that worked well for years, and I don't think it's a system that should be changed at the whim of the market, which is what your bill does.
Response?
Well, I would just say that, you know, we as a legislature have been doing all kinds of things. We've been passing ARGRs, we've been passing local regional marketing initiatives, we've been encouraging high-valued fishery products, but high-valued fishery products are often and generally unprocessed. They're fat, they're fresh, they're in the round, they're live, and yet our tax structure hasn't kept up with that, so we put in a disincentive to say, if you ship your product out live or fresh or unprocessed, then you lose your tax share. And I don't think that that's what the legislature has ever intended to do in their tax structure, and this just corrects that. It doesn't, that no one pays a cent more tax, no one distributes anything any differently than just saying that the port of landing, if it's a municipality, if fish are landed in a municipality and are exported from the state unprocessed, then the port of landing will be considered the port of processing for distribution of fish tax. That's what this bill does.
Okay, thank you. Anything else, Representative Moses, for now?
Okay, question.
We owe you a lot of airtime, so if you have some more questions.
I'm keeping track of it.
All right. We'll come back to you. Okay. Representative, just
listening to the colloquy, Representative Seaton, reminds me a little bit of the discussion when we had consideration of the sales tax and Ways and Means, where local communities had implemented a sales tax in their own community and had sort of stepped up on a local basis to meet their local needs in response to, you know, local needs slash wants. And then the state's consideration of the sales tax would have really harmed those local communities and imposed a significant burden on purchases within those communities to their detriment, but to the benefit of communities that did not have a local sales tax. And I was listening to Representative Moses' concern. Is that a flawed analogy, or is there a way to sort of deal with the local sales tax issue that Representative Moses has discussed in the context of your desire, I think, to adapt the industry's taxation policies to the way the industry has grown?
Yeah, I don't Through the chair, Representative Larrick, I don't think it's quite the same. What we have on the statewide level is we have a raw fish tax that we have a policy call of sharing half of that raw fish tax back to local communities. And that's all this is talking about, is not talking about whether you have a property tax or whether you have a sales tax or whether you have anything else. If you're a municipality, fish are landed in your community, and if they're processed in the state of Alaska, if they're processed in your community, you get half the tax back. If they're processed in another community in Alaska, that community gets half the raw fish tax. And all we're addressing here is this new segment of fish that are exported, unprocessed from the state, and saying that if you've generated the revenue by having the port facility, shipping, doing all these things, and it goes out of the state unprocessed, then you're just going to be considered the port that it was processed in. And so it's just bringing back the revenues to the exact people that we were always targeting at before, is those people that were generating the revenue to offset and to help on the infrastructure needs of those communities that generate the revenues. And so I think it's different than the sales tax example.
And then the other question I had is several fisheries have situations where smaller vessels like gillnet or trollers will harvest a fishery. The fishermen will have a processing license, be able to process the catch on board, sell, say, the roe to a scow, floating fish scow, that's not in port, and then the scow will process that product, either the whole fish or the roe, and then the fisherman goes about their business. They've been given a fish ticket. That scow is anchored somewhere, it's not in a community. Does the state benefit at all from a tax on that product?
Through the chair, yes, it definitely does. Any fish products that are processed outside of a municipality, outside of a community, outside of a borough, goes that 50% of the fish tax goes to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and is distributed through that formula throughout those management regions. And this bill does not change that at all. So fish that are not landed in a community are... The 50% still goes through the Department of Commerce formula.
Anything else, Representative Warren? Okay, let's go to the public testimony. Representative Seaton, I noticed this bill did not go to resources or fisheries. Was there any? Do you think this should have? I mean, again, we're a finance group, and I know this does deal with finances, but. We don't know much about fish, or I don't know much about fish. And, I guess Representative Moses does, Representative Wyrock, and not many fish in Fairbanks.
I like them.
Anchorage, do you like them? Okay. But we'll, you're going to educate us, and there's a lot of people here that testify, so we'll.
Sure. I was on Resources Committee, and I would have expected it to come there. It didn't get a resource referral. Basically, it's a tax distribution. Issue, and I think that's why it went there, because it wasn't increasing any amounts of taxes. All it was talking about was distribution.
Yeah, and it has a zero fiscal note, so that got my attention.
Yeah.
So. Okay, very good. Oh, Representative Foster.
Yeah, you mentioned a little while ago that there's some winners, some gainers, and some losers in one of the locales that would lose would be Western Alaska. Can you expand on that? I'm not exactly sure.
Sure.
I know you chatted with Representative Moses on that. No, how does that affect
nomenclature? I don't believe it affects nomenclature. Department of Revenue is here. It might be able to tell us the exact thing.
I see you've got my delegates listed in some of these lists here.
The fishery management areas where it's distributed to, it's all based on total poundage of product that is processed in that management area. So if the, like out in Alaska that has a huge pollock fleet, that's where most of the fish tax is distributed to, because it's based on poundage, not on the value of the fisheries that the revenue is generated from. But I think I'm missing
missing your question there, but I hope.
Well, you had said earlier it was from Alaska to lose on this bill. I just wondering how. But I'll ask Governor.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead and start the teleconference. Looks like the first person is Buck Lukitas. Saying that right? Buck, are you there?
The North Pacific Fisheries Association in Homer. NPFA is a commercial fishing organization, and our members are longliners and crabbers, herring, salmon, and cod fishermen. And we support HB 25. This bill really modernizes or corrects a poorly constructed tax statute. People in the Kenai Peninsula have identified the need to equitably share in fish taxes for fisheries products across our docks. We think that the work version draft C is the best vehicle to do this. Homer's participating in a market segment that's absolutely essential to the economic health of Alaska's fisheries. We're building a fresh market infrastructure. This is leading the industry out of the low-quality, low-price structure. We're utilizing our docks and transportation infrastructure to get fresh fish to market. Many, if not most, high-end seafood restaurants only serve fresh fish. Fresh is a growing trend, and it's where the value is. I'll be brief here. Again, this is a fairness and equity issue. The model really should be, if a community invests in infrastructure, that's docks and cranes and ice machines, just like Homer, Seward, Kenai have done, the community should share in a direct proportional manner the tax that's generated. And then I'll just say one thing on a personal note. I almost do all of my fishing out west, and probably 90% of the value of the fish that I sell goes into Dutch Harbor or King Cove, and I have a homestead out in the near the village of False Pass. And I recognize, and I think all fishermen recognize, that when fresh markets do well, in other words, when halibut's $3.30 in Homer, that benefits me even if I don't deliver into Homer, even if I'm delivering into Dutch Harbor. If I'm a Bristol Bay fisherman, and a troller in southeast in Sitka gets $7 a pound for his fresh king salmon, and again, this is what HB 25 addresses, I'm going to benefit in Bristol Bay because it's basically showing what the highest and best use of that fisheries product is, and eventually, in the long term, everybody benefits. And so when we have $3.30 a pound halibut in Homer, we're going to have $2.90 a pound halibut in Dutch Harbor, and that benefits Dutch Harbor as well as the state. So again, this is a fairness and equity issue. I think HB 25 is a good bill. It's well thought out. We want you to look at this new draft version C, and thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Buck, for your testimony. Don't see any questions, so we'll go on to Alan Parks in Homer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Did we lose Alan? Alan, we can't hear you.
Oh, there you go.
All right, now we can hear you, Alan.
Okay. Yeah, well, my name's Alan Parks, and I'm representing myself today. I'm a 30-year commercial fisherman. Out of Homer, I've participated in many fisheries throughout the state. I really appreciate the discussion and questions that you guys participated in with the sponsor of the bill. I support HB 25. I guess I need to comment a little bit too, is that I was an elected official at the Homer City Council and a chairman of the Fisheries Task Force at a time when the icicle fire happened. And we saw a drastic reduction in our fisheries tax to the city of Homer because of that fire. And the task force looked at a lot of different issues associated with how we could address the commercial fishing industry that uses the infrastructure of the city of Homer. And one of them we spent a lot of time with back in 98 was the fisheries business tax and the fact that a lot of the fish are getting trucked out of the state and being exported out, and we weren't receiving anything back of any substance to support the infrastructure that we were using to land our fish. So I think Representative Seaton explained it quite well. I support the bill. I support the draft version C, and appreciate your time. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. We'll go on to Dean Ball.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dean Ball. I'm the finance director for the City of Homer. The City of Homer appreciates the opportunity to comment on House Bill 25. We also support House Bill 25 in the original format that it was written. City of Homer has an excess of $12 million invested in fish docks, cranes, ice house to support the ground fishing fleet. We're one of the largest ports of landing for halibut. Close to 11 million pounds this last year came over our docks. Yet we received no fish tax on any of that to help maintain or support the infrastructure used to support this fishing fleet, as it was all sent out of state for processing in other areas. So before we have to implement additional taxes on the fishermen, we'd like to see the existing fish taxes reallocated to the ports of landing to help support maintain the infrastructure that is there to produce this tax. This would be a more fair, appropriate distribution of the existing fish tax collected by the state. We would like to note that we do support Representative Seaton's proposed substitute bill with the hold harmless clause with the sunset provision based on some sort of revenue sharing program. I'd like to thank you for your time and your consideration on this bill.
All right. Can I just ask you? Yeah, we have a question for you, Dean. Go ahead, Representative.
Yeah, the gentleman that's an official in Homer. Does a community like yours, do you get no benefit at all? Are there no fees or any costs that somebody bringing in fish pays? I'm just, again, this is totally an uninformed question trying to seek an answer.
We do charge a wharf fee going over the dock, and we're one of the few communities in the state that has cranes that the fishermen can actually use themselves. We don't have to provide an operator, so we do charge a fee for the use of those cranes, but they nowhere cover the total cost of the operation of the fish dock that we have out there.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for your testimony. Let's see. Looks like we're going to Erica Sikrimo.
This is Erica Tritomo.
Oh, sorry.
And I represent the City of Acutan and the Aleutians.
Okay, very good, Erica. Go ahead, please.
This tax was originally established, to my understanding.
I think we lost you, Erica. Erica, we can't hear you.
Okay.
There you go. Thank you.
The way I understand it, this tax was established to compensate us for the impacts by the fishing fleet and their crews, the impacts to our harbors and docks and jails and health clinics and waste disposal systems. Those impacts are ongoing and very real. Acutan has no state-owned or supported infrastructure in our community. So if somebody rams our dock or the repairs are our expense, the crews use our communities, our jails, our clinics. The product may go elsewhere, and I think from Acutan it pretty much all goes overseas and not to other places because we don't have an airport. But these impacts, these costs are very real to us, and it's those costs that the tax is used for. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Erica. Thank you for your testimony. I have here that there's another person there who wanted to testify, but I don't have a name.
That would be Gary Hennig, and I've been the city manager for King Cove for the last 14 years.
Great. Go ahead, Gary.
The city of King Cove does not support House Bill 25. If this bill becomes law, the potential loss in annual revenue to the city could be as much as $30,000. This revenue loss, combined with other recent declines in state funding through municipal assistance and revenue sharing, totals about $100,000. This is significant to a community of 800 residents. King Cove has a history of being a progressive community willing to do what is necessary to maintain a reasonable level of annual revenue to provide city services to support our two harbors, the local clinic, the city-owned power system, and etc. Approximately 75% of our annual revenue comes from the fisheries of the North Pacific and the Bering Sea. When revenues started declining in the 1990s, our local residents voted in favor of increasing our local sales tax by 100%. We went from a 2% to a 4% tax. Then, when that was not enough, a local fisheries business impact tax was adopted into law. This particular tax is most likely a one-of-a-kind in the state and presently requires Peter Pan Seafoods to pay this tax just to do business in King Cove. And in the early 1990s, King Cove was one of the first and also the smallest to be a good steward of the state and accept a harbor ownership transfer from the state for our first boat harbor. This good faith decision and responsibility has been an ongoing financial challenge for the city since that time. Now, specific to House Bill 25, due to King Cove's strategic location, it is very clear that King Cove provides harbor support and other services for fishermen catching fish that don't necessarily come ashore in our community for processing. This annual extraterritorial tax, which is what we are partly talking about here, is revenue that helps us mitigate the impact and cost of these services. The prospects of seeing another $30,000 in revenue dissipate to those communities that are mostly bigger than King Cove is exasperating. Those communities who now want this fish tax should tax it themselves, just like we do in King Cove. And we are fully cognizant that places like Homer and Seward have a big advantage being on a road system, while the communities in Southeast have heavily subsidized air service through the Essential Air Service Program. Not taxing the fish products locally already increases their competitive advantages. Please do not pass House Bill 25. It unfairly penalizes communities like King Cove, who are already doing the right thing by first looking within their own means before trying to take revenues away from other communities. Thank you.
Okay, we do have a question for you.
This one's not technical, just King Cove. Is that in Aleutians Eastboro, or is that correct?
It's the second largest city in the Aleutians Eastboro.
Thank you.
Very good. Yeah, don't you have the longest airplane runway?
We have the worst airport runway.
Okay, I knew there was something about your runway out there.
It's Cold Bay. You're thinking of Cold Bay, that we're wanting to get
Cold Bay
so we can save some lives not having to fly into King Cove.
Okay. Very, very good. Thank you. Jeff Currier with Lake and Penn, Burl. Are you with us, Jeff?
Finance director is here as well and would like to testify, if he may, after I'm finished.
Okay, go ahead, Jeff.
I'm more than a little bit frustrated. I don't have anything written or prepared, but I've been listening to the information, and I agree with what Gary Henning had to say. This money that we're talking about extracting from Western Alaska has been used historically for dealing with the impacts of fishing. In many communities, they have to hire a summertime VPSO or rent-a-cop to help control the goings-on because of the fishing fleet that comes in when the weather's down or when the periods are closed, etc. The impacts are real, the costs are real, and quite frankly, the return on the tax that we're talking about here, the shared fisheries business tax, don't amount to much in each community. They really don't offset all those costs by any means. And because of that, these communities have instituted taxes of their own, fish taxes of their own. And now we have a community who apparently is moving a lot of fresh fish, and God bless them, they are helping the market. We like that. But, you know, trying to repair a problem in their community by taking money away from Western Alaska or elsewhere seems kind of ludicrous. I mean, they have the ability to pass taxes on these products or these fish, just like we've done out here in Western Alaska. So I suggest that they should pass taxes in these communities. Either that, or let's change the definition of processed fish. You know, if a fish is headed and gutted and bled and et cetera, maybe it's processed. So maybe we need to look at that, or maybe you folks do. I don't know. Secondly, I'd like to say that the sunset clause that's in the CS will automatically trigger, I believe, unless I'm mistaken, the minute the governor signs 98, Senate Bill 98, because there are money for fuels in that bill, and I think that's probably going to trip the trigger. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so. I just really would appreciate it if finance would send this thing back to the Fisheries Committee and see if they'll pass it out the way it's been revised. I don't think it'll happen. Thank you.
Okay, Jeff, thank you for your testimony and your comments. Did you say who else was there that wanted to testify?
Our finance director, Don Strand.
All right. John, go ahead, please.
I would like to add a couple things to what Jeff said. I would also urge the committee to send us back to Fisheries. I believe the only reason it came out of Fisheries is because they added the Hold Harmless Amendment to it, and to, in essence, make a joke out of that by rewriting the bill after it came out of Fisheries is a little concerning, to say the least. The reason, like I said, it had a Hold Harmless Agreement, and now we're saying that sunset, quote-unquote, when a municipality gets $20,000 in some kind of state revenue. Well, if communities out here get $20,000 in state revenue, it's going to go pretty much across the board in the state. So why should we be hurt because of that? I think that's ludicrous. I also want to make the comment that this, what we're talking about, is a processing tax. If there's no processing being done, why should a community be entitled to a processing tax? If Homer wants to take care of their infrastructure for landing fish, institute a landing tax. The city of Chignik in our borough has a landing tax. They are trying to compete with the Homers of the world that don't have taxes. They're already at a disadvantage. Another thing in this rewrite, originally the tax went, the sale of the fish had to take place in the municipality that got the processing tax. Now in the rewrite, that has been taken out. It is now landing. So I find it very troubling that the bill has been basically entirely rewritten almost once it passed out of committee and is moving forward as such. And I mean, I honestly don't believe it would ever get out of Fisheries in this format. Like Representative Moses said, we currently have a borough fish tax. The city of Igigik has a fish tax. The city of Pilot Point has a fish tax. The city of Chignik has a landing tax. We're all trying to compete with places that have no tax that now are trying to get money out of, basically, that, you know, is it not right? And that's about all I have to say. We're strongly opposed to House Bill 25. We do not feel it's good legislation. If we're going to look at tweaking the fish formula, the fish tax structure, let's look at the whole picture and not start picking out little bits and pieces that benefit larger municipalities and hurts the little ones.
Okay, Don. Thank you. Appreciate the testimony. Okay, let's go to Dutch Harbor, Unalaska. Chris Hedick.
Gladick.
Yeah, put him in a glass. Gladick, yes, the manager of the city of Unalaska. Are you with us, Chris?
This is Amy Kinyajowski. I'm filling in for Chris Laddick today.
Okay.
And as you are probably aware, the City of Unalaska does not support House Bill 25 in any of its many iterations. We don't support the idea of reallocating existing resources from one area of the state to another area of the state, especially with Southwest Alaska. The impacts were, it's very expensive to operate out here. The original legislation that I believe Erica Tritremel pointed out, the intent of the original tax structure was to support, give those communities back some of the revenue sharing to help mitigate the impacts of processing and of the impact of the fisheries that takes place. We are a very well-to-do community. Nobody is going to apologize for that. Everybody works hard out here. But we also have a tremendous impact to our system. We run, 9 million gallons of water in our municipal water system to support our infrastructure. We've got an enormous dock that we have to take care of, three separate facilities. And these impacts to our clinic, our roads, we aren't linked up to the state other than through by air. So these are huge impacts to us, and we don't support taking away money from not just the City of Unalaska, but to other areas in the region and reallocate that. The city does have a raw fish tax. We've had it in place for many years, and that does help us offset the cost of our infrastructure for our docks. We would encourage these other communities that do have impacts, undeniably they do have impacts to their infrastructure, to just go ahead and consider passing a local sales tax or a raw fish tax, as the rest of our communities have done. I had one other point that I wanted to make. We would also support in general, if there's a problem with the original law as it was written, perhaps they do need to redefine the term process and look at that as a whole rather than as the people before us said, I think it was Jeff, rather than cherry pick certain aspects of the bill. And I think those are the main points that I wanted to make. The City of Unalaska does not support it, and we would encourage your committee to really continue to ask questions. There are fiscal impacts, not just to the City of Unalaska, but to all the other areas in the region that are extremely unfair. They don't promote a sense of state unity or purpose, but are rather divisive. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We didn't catch your name. Unfortunately, you cut out just as you were starting to speak. Could you give us your name and affiliation again, please?
Sure. This is Amy Kinyajowski, and I'm the Assistant City Manager for the City of Unalaska.
Okay. Thank you very much, Amy. And I know some of you folks, especially in Lake Penn area, also have Representative Ledoux as your representative, and she is here also just to let you know. Okay, let's go on to Craig, Dennis Watson, the mayor of Craig.
Any members, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
All right, I hope you're ready for this. Folks in Western Alaska have this exactly backwards. You know, we don't want anything that isn't ours. We want to retain what is ours is what we're asking. Now, I'm partially responsible for what's happened here because the bill, the shared fishery business tax bill that went in back in the early 90s, was a result of the City of Craig. We had it submitted. We walked it through the legislature. Some people changed some things in it that we didn't care for much. But the fact is, and I'll read it from, I have the bill analysis from the original bill. And let me say, this is what this bill was intended to do. Now, there's new funds will be delivered from currently unshared fish taxes collected from processors located outside of municipal boundaries. That does not mean that this bill was allowed to take fish that crossed over docks in communities and share that tax with somebody else. Somebody stuck that in sometime later down the road. There was a lot of confusion added into this bill from a bill that happened a year or two later that Senator Fred Zaroff got in and monkeyed. with exactly what the term processed means. I think that maybe opened the door for later allowing the state to come in and do what it has done now and take fish that go over the dock in municipalities and share it with municipalities other than that. Now, I'm not exactly sure when this started happening. We've been following, you know, we thought that our processors were lying to us here because we could not match up the amount of fish they were taking with the amount of fish tax we were getting back. We were going to have them all audited and really take them to the cleaners for giving us a bad time about it. And lo and behold, we found out that the state had stepped in and done this. You know, in years gone by, head and gutted fish used to go to the community where it was, you know, where it was landed at. That changed somewhere along the line here. I'm not sure exactly what date that was, but it was sometime after we had asked, actually it was Representative Peter Gall that submitted the original bill. It was sometime after that, and I suspect that, well, let me give you a little idea why we did this bill. We had up to 8 floating processors to process salmon every year out off the shore of Craig. They were just paying to the state. We asked that this bill be put in so they would share with the communities the proceeds of these raw fish tax. This wound up being a very large revenue sharing bill and kind of morphed into something that actually gave that tax to communities that really had nothing to do with it. But we lived with that. We were okay with that because we just felt some of it should go back to the communities. Never in our dreams did we ever think that we would be going in and taking fish landed in a community and send the proceeds somewhere else. So I think a lot of folks have a really wrong idea about the beginnings of this and the impacts. And impact is what it is about. These are impact monies that we're talking about, not revenue sharing monies. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis, for your testimony. We'll go back down to Alaska to Shirley Mark Quick. And before we do, though, I also want to let you folks know out in the teleconference line that Representative Thomas is also here. Seems like fish brings out all the representatives who represent fishing areas, which is good. Okay, Shirley, are you with us there in Alaska?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
We sure can. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. I am currently the mayor of the city of Unalaska, and I'm here with Amy Knizhovsky. And again, I would just like to repeat that Unalaska, as a member of the Western Aleutian Communities, does not support House Bill 25. I do not have the latest version of the bill, so I'm I'll do what I can. I'll do the best I can without it. However, Amy made most of the points that I think it was important to make. I guess the last thing that we thought about here is that in changing legislation, in changing a tax structure based on the market, one thing that we have learned out here in Unalaska with our pollock fisheries and crab is that the markets are extremely volatile and seem to be changing every year into something different. There's something new. So, you know, I would caution against legislation that attempts to cherry-pick an area and a market that might be completely different 2 years from now or even 1 year from now. I think it's great. I'll be the first to say the value-added price that the fishermen are getting is great. That's been a long time coming to the state. I wish we could do something like that out here. But at the same time, every time we hear talk about this fair share of this tax and the fair share of that, there are such major differences between the fishing communities throughout this state that it's very hard to find a fair for anything because we're so different. We do have some fresh crab and fresh fish here and there that goes out by air on the market, but we have to compete then with communities who are on the Alaska road system who can do it for a far more efficient price and have a better market for it. So I would argue that that's not fair, but we're not asking for any changes to legislation to try and make that fairer for the fresh market out in Alaska. And again, understanding the difference, maybe it goes back to the definition of process, because our costs out here to provide the infrastructure that supports our fisheries is enormous. And this tax has been a way to help defray some of those costs. And again, our local 3% fisheries tax is the other way that we help defray it. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that money that we're talking about here that would be redistributed does in fact come from our at-sea processing fleet. They catch and process outside the city limits and bring it in and land it in Alaska, thereby utilizing our infrastructure from our landfill to our roads, electric utility, the docks, our clinic, the library, etc. Not to mention then our processors here who utilize all of those, including heavily our water and sewer. So I would like to see this go to the Fisheries Committee as well. I believe it's just been through the Committee on Regional Affairs and now Finance, and I'm wondering why it didn't go through the Fisheries Committee, and would like to see this get a few more questions answered. And I guess the last question we would have is, we've seen a lot of different numbers out there, several different graphs of who would win what, who may lose what, with a dollar amount, understanding that it's impossible to get that perfect, but trying to figure out what the actual cost could be close to. And they've been all over the board for us. And I guess with the inclusion then of a hold harmless for communities under 300 and boroughs under 3,000, where would the majority of that money be coming from then? How does that change the split? But at the same time, if you're going to do something like this, you have to protect those smaller communities. You simply have to. They cannot lose that kind of money for their infrastructure. Particularly most of these communities, like Representative Moses said, they've got a raw fish tax. And I would really hope that other communities in other parts of the state would look at that as well, primarily, or I guess also because it's, you know, it sounds fishermen are getting up to the value of their catch has doubled or sometimes tripled. So might be a good incentive there for fishermen to share a small portion of the monies necessary to keep the infrastructure of the docks to where that they would like them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor, I understand there's also someone else there. Again, I don't have a name.
Nope, today it's just the Assistant City Manager, Amy Kanajowski, and myself.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, for your testimony. Okay, was there anybody else online that we may have overlooked? Okay, anybody else here in the audience?
Excuse me, the City of Wrangell signed in, I think, very early.
Did we miss them? Well, if the City of Wrangell's online, we want to hear from the City of Wrangell. So.
Okay, my name is Valerie McCandless, and I'm serving as Mayor of the City of Wrangell.
Very good, welcome.
I want to thank you all from the House Finance Committee for allowing us to testify today. And I would like to invite everyone, both on the committee and people who are listening, to recall the statement was, are there winners and losers here, and if so, who? And what I'm inviting you to do is to make a paradigm shift and look at it through a different lens, which is that when this bill was originally initiated during the 90s, it was set up, and if I'm not incorrect, it's a raw fish tax. That is what it is. It is a raw fish tax bill. And when it was set up, 50% of the revenues went to the DCCED, and 50% were thought to go to the communities of Landing. Now, when I was elected mayor a year and a half ago, I went over to our local fisheries and our state fishing and had them explain to me how fish tax worked. And believe me, they explained to me that we received the portion from the landings where the fish tax ticket took place. And so we were quite surprised to find out as a community that for the amount of monies that the processors were paying in, we were not getting the share back within those amounts. And in our community of Wrangell, we paid 7% sales tax for everyone in the community. So when individuals recommend that we look at additional taxes to add on to that, like additional fish taxes, I would invite those communities to please let us know, are they also paying a 7% sales tax? Because this we are basically the Appalachia of Alaska. We are we're struggling, and here we have put tremendous effort into creating a fish, you know, creating a fishery market where we are trying to send out fresh product, only to discover that we get no tax on that. And I think the best example that I have yet heard is one that some of our city staff put together, which was if you had a community, and I'm just going to give the example, let's say it's a community in the Aleutians, Community A, who catches 50% of all the fish that are caught in Alaska, then pick Community B, who captures the other 50% of the fish in the entire state that are sent out. Community A processes all those fish. They process theirs. Community B in Southeast sends theirs out fresh. They have gooey ducks. They send out, you know, troll-caught salmon. They pay taxes. Each one pays taxes on this. Yet Community A captures 100% of the tax. Community B, who sends out, who has the fresh product, gets none of the tax. Now we all, Aleutian communities as well as Southeastern communities, we all have responsibilities with our harbors. And we have infrastructure needs. We also have assumed our harbors, and the state set aside, I believe it's $3.4 million for our harbors to bring them up to standard. We just had our engineering assessment done, and we have been told that the cost to bring it up to minimum standards will be between $7 and $10 million. We need to be able to obtain money that the bill was set up on a raw fish tax with 50% of what your local processors were paying was supposed to come back to your community. But because of an interpretation by a later administration, those monies are going all to community, to the example, the broad example of Community A. 100% of that 50% that is divided for the communities, 100% of that is going to those communities that do the bulk of the processing, and it's based on a formula of poundage cost. Now, we discussed this issue at Southeast Conference last week, and one of the things that was brought up was the marine fuel taxes and aviation fuel taxes. Now, that was an issue that Southeast Mayor said needs to be looked at since communities have been asked to take over their harbors, and since the state is no longer taking the responsibility of keeping those harbors upgraded, we need to look at whether those monies go back to the communities where the fuels are being sold. Our communities, our mayors would all support that if Aleutian communities spend more money on fuels, which they do, they should get, if there was a similar tax, like the raw fish tax, if there was a similar tax and 50% of the fuel taxes went to the government, the state, if 50% went back to the communities where the fuels were sold, we support those monies staying in the communities where those fuels were sold. And so by a comparison, where those fish are landed, where they are leaving, we believe that we should be getting, rightfully getting, those monies that we are paying in. Because right now, our processors are paying the money to communities out in the Aleutian chain. And again, 50% of those monies go into a statewide pot, which we are glad to share throughout the state. But the intention of the original bill was that 50% of those monies were supposed to go back to the communities of landing, and it is not happening. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. For that testimony, I understand too. We have Julie Decker.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. If you would give us your name and affiliation, please.
My name is Julie Decker. I'm the executive director of the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association. Our association represents harvesters, processors, and the communities of Southeast. SARCA strongly supports this bill. And I believe we believe it is a question of fairness. The system right now, for whatever reason, whoever made the decision to change the system from the original intent and make this arbitrary decision that unprocessed fish should be treated differently than processed fish, it's not fair. The original intent of the legislation was to share 50% of the raw fish tax back to the communities. It's very clear and very plain in the legislation, and for some reason it has been switched around for only unprocessed fish. They've set that aside as a separate category in order to create this little pot of shared funds. The example I would like to explain to you right now is in Ketchikan, the borough, Ketchikan Gateway Borough, about 4 years ago, gave SARTS a $15,000 grant in order to look into how we can begin shipping live buoy ducks. Since then, we've worked on the issue, and we've been able to get 90% of the buoy ducks shipped live from our quota each year. The Ketchikan Gateway Borough did that because they were looking forward to increased revenues off of increased values in those buoy ducks. Now we find out that Ketchikan is actually getting virtually nothing back from those revenues from that raw fish tax generated on the buoy ducks. This is a very odd situation because you have the community who was trying to step forward and do something positive, and now they're being punished. And it creates a disincentive for communities to do that. It creates a disincentive for individuals, processors, fishermen to go out and get that added value out of something that's live or fresh. Another aspect to look at is that the marketplace is demanding more and more of this type of product. And as we continue in the future, if this is not dealt with, the problem will begin to expand and get larger. I think the one main thing to look at from the perspective from other communities who are losing money is that we feel like this money has been hijacked. It's not a situation where we're trying to take something away from someone else. It's a situation, we believe, where something in the past has been taken away from us and continues to be taken away from us every year. We just want back what should be fairly ours and which is fairly everyone else's. We also support some sort of sunset on the hold harmless clause. We understand that the impact of this change will negatively affect some communities, and to allow them to prepare for that is reasonable. But we don't think it's reasonable to allow that to continue forever. I appreciate the time to testify, and thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Decker. Is there anyone else in Wrangell?
No.
Okay, very good. Is there anyone else online who wanted to testify? Okay, what I'm going to do is go ahead and close public testimony on this. We've had a lot of discussion, a lot of inputs, both for and against the bill. And I know this bill is important to you, Representative Seaton. So what I'd like to do is have this go to a subcommittee with them reporting back to us
within 2 weeks. Is that fair enough?
Yes, sir.
Because I know when you hear subcommittee, you get this, oh no, it's going to nowhere land. That's not my intent here. I'm hoping that there is a compromise or some kind of solution here where we're not putting one community against another, or maybe there's some other solution. But I want to ask the people who look at this fairly and accurately, and so I've asked Representative Hawker to chair the subcommittee. He'll represent kind of the South Central area, those of us who don't know much about fish, and Representative Weirach to represent Southeast, who fishing is very important, and of course Representative Moses from the Southwest area. They'll work with you, they'll work with my staff, Suzanne Cunningham, and we'll wait to hear back what the recommendation is from the subcommittee, and then we'll take up as a committee and go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. I would like to just add
sure.
a couple other things. One was that there was an indication of the reallocation of funds from out west to somewhere else, and I do want to make sure the committee understands that all this bill does is takes and allocates the
funds that are generated within a municipality back to that same municipality. And the current system we have is reallocating from the municipalities that are generating the revenue to somewhere else. And then Representative Foster had a question about Nome, and we know at least 30,000 pounds of king crab that were shipped out of Nome Live went to Anchorage and were shipped out live to Japan, so Nome lost all of the fish tax on that 30,000 pounds of king crab. And that's what's happening every time you get a high-value product that goes out in an unprocessed state. Your community or any community that goes for that high-value product loses the tax base on that product. And that's the entire intent of this bill, is to get that realigned. And I appreciate the assignment to the subcommittee, and I'll work with it.
Since I just eat them and only catch them as a sportsman, maybe I could just enter in a couple things since the subcommittee is leaving here and is going to come back and try to help us with this. If this were a brand new bill, I wouldn't have any problem with it whatsoever. The compelling case is there, I think, that just from an outsider looking in. The difficulty with this bill, it's a zero-sum game, and I can understand the passion on both sides of it. But that's what makes it difficult is it's a winners and losers thing, and so if you were here and we're just starting this thing up, it'd be easy for me to get in and go on this bus joyfully. But it's that zero sum situation, and the fact that in order to cut the kayak down, we have to hold harmless. So. One could argue that if your hold harmless went all the way to Carl, we wouldn't be arguing here. We'd run this thing right through, except for the sunset thing, which I felt the table shudder as that discussion happened. Anyway, I just wanted to make the point as someone that is not in a fishing community, even though I'm a sports fisherman, that's what's sticking in my processor right now. Is the fact that it's a zero-sum game, and we can call them hijackers or people that are just getting treated under the law. Probably, it will help me immensely if the subcommittee somehow handles those elements. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Moses, Representative Wyrock, and Representative Pocket will chair. Yeah, you definitely have a tough task ahead of you as a subcommittee, but I think as a small group you're going to much better be able to come up with some recommendation than if we tried to do it here as a group of 11. And I agree with Representative Kelly, if we can find a win-win here instead of putting one community against another, that would be my preference also.
And Mr. Chairman, if this had come forward 10 years ago, that would have taken all the problems, because these things are developing, and the problem is it's going to develop more and more because we are trying to increase the value of the fisheries across the state. And the way we've got it is every time we increase the value of the fisheries, the communities that increase their value lose their tax base. And that's what this is attempting to do. And I appreciate working with
Representative. Again, thank you for your time. And again, I just think this is going to be the fastest way. The other thought I had is to try to send it to resources and let you guys hash it out there. But I think this will be faster. And again, this may be a bigger subject than we can even handle at this committee. We may need to look at some other alternative that looks at the whole process of our fish tax.
Task force.
Blue ribbon test. Okay, so with that, let's set that bill aside for now. Thank you, Representative Seaton. I know we do have some more bills on the agenda, and we'll try to get to those. My hope is we can continue here, but I know Representative Co-Chair Chenault wants to get the operating budget out today, so why don't we just take a brief at ease while we kind of change thoughts here and get back to the budget.
bring finance back after a little short intermission. Before us now, I'm going to take up two bills, first being the mental health budget. I don't know how much to really say about it, but my intention is not to talk long about either one of these budgets. Most of the talking was been done through the committee process and through the subcommittee process. As most of you know, the mental health budget deals with issues that deal with mental health and other issues around the state. There's money in this budget for anything from frontline social workers to the Parkland Youth Center, suicide prevention council, you name it, it's here. It's a large part of the budget. The number is $125,801,600. We're looking at the version F, and with that, that's about the extent of my confidence on this. I think there's a couple of good items in here, and that would be my compliment. So I guess I'm going to do the questions or comments from the committee members. Representative,
we haven't had this testimony. Do we know, has the mental health board given us any letter or opinions on the mental health budget?
Representative Croft, I have not seen one. So I would say that they probably have.
Mr. Chairman? Well, that entity and their constituency definitely let us know when we've done something that took part. So we're not hearing from them is some type of positive.
Thank you, Representative Croft. Are there any other questions or concerns or comments?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 66, version F, out of here.
Are there any objections? Hearing or seeing none, we will move House Bill 66 out of committee with the individual recommendation.
Okay. Mr. Representative Foster.
Thank you. I give that to Representative Foster. Next, we'll move on to operating budget, House Bill 67. I'll probably talk just a little bit longer on it. Not a whole bunch. As I've stated earlier, a lot of these issues have been brought up in subcommittee. We went through, I believe, like 8,500 amendments, something like that, on the floor here in finance. And this is the total of budget. Currently, that stands at it's at $281,882,000 increase over the 05 budget. When we look at the issues, I think there's probably enough issues in this budget to make every one of us squeamish in one form or fashion. Some of the fact that maybe there's not enough of individual programs. Others, that there's too much. And I think it's a mix of probably good and some bad. I think when we look at these numbers, the $271 million number, I think that we need to realize that through our own device, I guess, that we've added much of this area ourselves, and we've chosen to do it. We currently have about $61 million more dollars in the 05 budget plan for K-12 education. We have a $71 million increase in health and social services, which affect, I wouldn't say a majority, but it affects a huge number of Alaskans scattered throughout Alaska in every district. We have a $67 million increase in capitalization or fund capitalization, and we have a $25 million increase in just the purse cost for
for state employees. I think we all know that it's a big problem. It's a problem that is being, we're attempting to address now. I don't think all of us agree at times to how it's being addressed, but nonetheless, we are proceeding to try to work up that problem and take care. Those are the big amounts. Those are the amounts that just stand out. For the public's information, the total for that is $224 million. Just around numbers. We can go down through the budget. We can look at the issues, where the increases are. There's $13 million in corrections. Some of that is due to increase employee cost. Some of that is due to about $2.8 million of that is due strictly to contractual increases in the cost to operate the private prison that we send our inmates to in I think that number for those inmates is around 700, almost 800 employees that are Alaskans that we have incarcerated in Arizona. I go down through this budget, we collected an additional $9.7 million for the public safety. That's another issue that Alaskans talk to, I'm sure, each and every one of us about our trooper service, about other services, BPSO, other services that we have in the state, and as we grow, our population grows, we continue to have more wants and needs in each of those departments. University, we agreed to put in $11.8 million more. Some say way too much, some say not enough. So it's another issue where I think all of us can at times probably cringe when we look at numbers. Other than that, there's additional money for the court system. There's additional money for our military veterans affairs. Additional money for Department of Natural Resources. And we have been put out through here and look at all the numbers. But the numbers that I just talked about earlier, one thing I'd like to do is first of all, thank all of the members of this finance committee and all of the chairmen of the subcommittee process and the diligent work as we went through the budget process. It's been my first year. I've feel that I've learned a lot. I think I've probably spent a lot more to learn. But I'd also like to thank the other members of our body who have worked with the Finance Committee and worked with our subcommittee chairs and try to craft a budget that I don't think all of us will be happy with, but I think it goes a long way to address the needs of the citizens of Alaska. So with that, that's my comments, and I'll open up the floor to my comments. Representative Stoltz.
Just very briefly, I'd really like to thank Bruce Tangerman. He's going to be leaving. I'm really miss him, and probably because he's also a big baseball fan. We could put things into a talent sheet that he could understand. But he's going on to different things. Just wanted to thank him if he's out there listening.
Thank you. Representative Joe.
Well, since you've kind of opened the discussion up at this point, I was going to object to moving the budget so I could make a few points, but since you've opened up this time, I think I'll maybe save us a lot of trouble and just do it now. I think we've made some progress in developing this budget. I thank members of this committee. But there are some issues out there that I think hopefully before the end of the session that we need to continue to pay attention to. And some of those were outlined through the amendment process. over the last couple of days, we've been hearing that the projections of oil and in the short future may spike considerably higher, maybe double where they are currently. And I know that's kind of, you know, short term, potentially short term. But the point is that high oil prices, and when we do have high oil prices, the state does well. The impacts on our communities, however, because of those prices, is hurtful and has put our many of our communities in the position of just having a very, very tough time, and specifically to the issue of municipal assistance in safe communities or revenue sharing in safe communities. You know, we have 9 communities out there that no longer function. We have 17 that have serious, serious debt issues. We have 39 that have terminated key services like police, road, and facility maintenance. We have 10 cities that have had their insurance canceled because they can't pay their premium. And we have 33 that are paying their bills on a monthly basis. And these communities are on the brink. And if the state's not going to step up to the plate and provide those communities assistance, I shudder to think what can happen in the next few years. And I think that as we go down, marching towards the end of the session through the budget process, that this is something that we need to keep our eyes open for. And along the same lines, the whole matching grant, where that allowed communities to leverage their money to make things better in their community. On the issue of youth prevention, I think it would have been a very good progressive step to have been able to fund the teen alcohol prevention programs. You know, all of us are in Alaska are painfully aware of the statistics that we lead in because of substance abuse. And by doing prevention of alcohol abuse, you know, I think we would be able to save probably over the long term several millions of dollars in several budgets. It's being proactive. We tend to be reactive. We have an opportunity to be proactive. And Mr. Chairman, I hope that before the end of session comes around that we'll rise to meet that opportunity to be proactive. You know, we all talk about the growing budget over and over and how it impacts the increasing cost of Medicaid. One of the easiest ways to control that kind of an issue is to get a handle on our substance abuse problem. And I think a good way to do that is through prevention. And finally, in that arena, you know, if our young people don't pick up some of the bad habits by the age of 19, they're not going to pick it up at all. And so I think that was a missed opportunity on our part, and would encourage the House as we move down to closure to give that serious consideration. And that's what I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments?
Sure. If you want me to.
We're done.
You want me to answer? Representative Crow.
Just very briefly of the numbers that you were talking about, sort of overview numbers on the budget. This budget has nothing, zero, for K through 12 education. It's because that's all in the fast track supplemental. Current status of that is it's being held hostage by the other side. So this document doesn't have anything for them. The document we did put it in, we allowed to be amended and are trying to fight them from holding it hostage to unrelated things. The increase for the university is 5%. The increase for K through 12, if we ever got it in the other vehicle, is just short of 10%. The amount for municipalities is nothing. No municipal assistance, no revenue sharing, and after amendments here, nothing for PERS TERS. And yet, despite those numbers, the key number to me is that in the non-education state budget, outside of education, this budget goes up 13.7%. The time for us to figure out whether this is, I mean, we're about to pass this out and go to the House floor and say that we think this is the document we want, the responsible document, to give nothing to municipalities, 5% for the university and the K through 12 hostage, while the overall operating budget goes up that much, I don't think is being responsible to our obligation to education or our obligation to those local governments that should be our partners in how we provide this service. I'm not going to object to moving the bill, but I have continuing serious concerns about the way we're treating municipalities and school districts, the way we're being treated on our education budget, and the amount we're giving to ourselves in effect. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Crawford. And I guess my only comment to yours, there can probably be a couple, but I think my only comment is simply that I don't believe that I don't think we approved the language that the other body has put into their education, HB1, and I think that we have a conference committee that we will go and address that issue and try to work that compromise. So I don't think that we as a body participated in that process as of yet, and that's a process that we will participate in the future time when the conference committee meets. So with that, there's a lot of comments. Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House Bill 67, version I, at a committee with individual recommendations.
Any objections? Seeing none, we will move House Bill 67 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Okay, we'll come back to order as everybody signs these individual recommendations on the budget. We're going to go ahead and, since we have Representative Seaton here, go ahead and pick up another bill that he has. Hopefully, this one will be a little easier. And then we'll call it quits after this bill. I know it's been a long week for everybody. Appreciate everyone staying
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. House Bill 20 is a bill that requires a separate appropriation bill for the operating expenses for primary and secondary education. And the whole purpose of this is to get early funding for education, set up a process for education. It is not as you'll notice, there are no numbers in this.
This is simply setting up a process so that the governor, by the fourth legislative day, will submit a education budget to the, or an education appropriation bill to the legislature, and then the legislature would, by March 5th of that year, pass and have completed the education funding appropriation bill. And that bill would include the foundation formula and other operating expenses. So it,
Representative Seaton, if I may interrupt just for a second, because there are some people online here for House Bill 131 and,
sure.
And House Bill, what else? Oh, 132. And we're not going to get to that today. So whoever's online, I apologize for keeping you waiting, but we'll take it up on Monday.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Those folks that online are online for those bills, if they can't come, or if they have testimony, they can submit in advance their testimony. I review that in advance. Sometimes it's helpful so that they don't feel like all their time is in.
Mr. Chairman, sure. As a sponsor of the bill, they're welcome to forward it to my office. I will take extra care to make sure everybody gets it.
Very good. Yes, and our fax number here is 465-6813. Again, 465-6813. And I believe, Ms. Cunningham, would that be an attempt then to take these up first on Monday at 1:30? Okay. Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, again, the bill would require, by the fourth legislative day, the governor to submit budget, and for the legislature to act by March 5th. And that would still leave in place the March 15th day that's statutorily required for school districts to notice tenured teachers that they may not be rehired for the following year. One of the big problems that we have is with morale in our schools is that they're required to notice. If they don't know that they're going to have money, they have to send out pink slips to these teachers. And as a policy reason, what they do is they send out to all non-tenured teachers at the same time. So all our new teachers who've just been in the system a year or two get a pink slip saying, basically, you're fired. But they also are told, well, depending upon what the budget comes out in May, we may be able to rehire you. And, of course, what's happening is in the interim time in April is when all the job fairs are. So teachers not knowing whether they have a job or not have to go out and recruit for other jobs, and so we lose a lot of good teachers. And also it's very disruptive, just morale-wise, within the system. We had originally moved the date back to the 25th for notification of teachers, but then it turned out that the job fairs, teacher job fairs, interfere, and that also became a problem with the teachers' associations. And so we left that date the same and went to March 5th. And pretty simple bill. Tries to accomplish everything. We did add it so that we would be able to do pupil trans, special appropriations, etc., that relate to education operating budget. But this appropriation bill would be limited so that it could not include things other than operating appropriations for schools. And that's the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Before we get to questions, there was an amendment also that the sponsor that has withdrawn.
For now. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But for now, I think we'll see it again. Any questions for the sponsor?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What this bill effectively does, and actually I would just note that I see that it's been co-sponsored by the co-chair of finance. But then again, every now and then he and I have disagreed on things. And he's not even here to take any of the flack. But this really bifurcates our budgeting process, and it creates a statutory a bifurcated budget process. We have an education budget that stands on its own, and then we've got all the rest of the things we've got to pay for in the state. And with different time frames, we have to pass education first, and then address all the other issues facing the state. I have some concerns that that ratification process violates a fundamental constitutional principle, and that being the whole arguments that was put forward in the development of the clause against dedicated funds, which if we dig back, and I'm doing this from memory, so forgive me if I'm not quite exact, but if you dig into the record there, you know, it talks about the reason why we do not dedicate funds in the state is that in each and every budget cycle, each and every of the state's critical needs is to compete equally and fairly amongst all the other competing needs for whatever the limited financial resources are we have available. And I'm a little concerned that we've effectively created here a situation where we say we fund education first and then all the other issues in the state get to fight over the scraps that are left over. And I'm just wondering how you reconcile that.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Hawker, we did not find any constitutional problem with this statutory requirement to do a separate appropriation bill, at least from legislegal. Gave us no indication of that. And of course, you know, it's a statutory provision, and if for some reason the legislature decides not to do it, I mean, the penalty is that there isn't any. Basically, this is a sets up a procedure so that it is required, but since the legislature can do statutorily amend whatever other statute there is, they can change it. What we're trying to do is exactly what the House did this year. The House came forward and tried to get early funding of education. That was one of our priorities in the House, and we did that. We set forward education funding, and the object here is to try to at least statutorily put some fences that says, okay, we're not going to put capital budget items in there, we're not going to put anything else in here, we're going to keep it to education so that we can go on that track, which basically the legislature has said has been, you know, an extreme high priority for them in the past, and this year tried to accomplish it. And hopefully this will give us a framework for accomplishing what the House was trying to do this year.
Again, and I say your viewpoint of you may have not had a constitutional problem with this bill, but I do sincerely believe that it violates the principle behind the constitutional prohibition. But you said it yourself. If we want to, this legislature, a future legislature, wants to do something different, all we do is start out the budget with says, notwithstanding Alaska Section 1417.302, we're going to do what we want to do anyway. So I'm not sure what we accomplish with this. It's a nice statement of intent, but I'm looking for substance in it.
And Representative Hawker, through the chair, we do this quite a bit, whether it's with Alaska Seafood Marketing Association, whether we have the in fisheries, we have aquaculture associations in which we collect taxes for, and we say we intend to rebate that. There's nothing that absolutely requires us to give the money that's collected through those assessments back, and yet we always do, because what we do is we set up a procedure that if the legislature thinks that that's a fair and equitable procedure, they have a mechanism. Granted, there's nothing short of a constitutional amendment that would require us to do this, but generally what I've seen in my short time here is that the legislature, if it passes these statutory guidelines and procedures, it generally does it because they feel that there's a really good reason and a need, and it will accomplish something, and they generally tend to live within that.
Quick comment. I agree at the end there. If we find we pass bills that we find a compelling need for. What I'm going to have to do on this, this one does trouble me, but Mr. Chairman, just to let you know, I had a competing appointment come up at 4 o'clock, so I'm going to have to defer the results of this bill to the wisdom of the rest of this committee, so that probably
easy. Thank you, Mr. Hawkins. President Julie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Almost every increase that we've been able to get
for the foundation has been part, has come right at the very end. That's when a lot of the action in the legislature occurs. And I understand why people want to head in this direction, but I think there are potentially missed opportunities by taking this route. Yes, it has been an issue for those school districts, but at the same time, a lot of the gain has come at the end of session, and the districts have benefited from it and have been at the table. And so I can't, this doesn't prevent that, but if we start going down that road, does it backfire?
And Representative Gill, through the chair, this was one of the competing arguments. You know, is it adequate or early? Do we want to preclude one by the other? Do we want to say, okay, we're not going to get early funding because maybe we can get more funding at the end? As you'll see from the letters, there's a lot of districts that have now come around to the situation of looking at the last couple of years. I mean, it hasn't been at the end. The House passed out $84.5 million, and it was at the end when it got cut back by $2-3 million. This year, we passed out early, and we got $70 million, which is, at this point in time, you know, a little up in the air, but the question of getting more money in that doesn't seem to be the situation we're in. There is a, you know, question of would it be less? And so I've been here a short period of time. You've been here a lot longer. You may have seen things in those past years, but in the last couple of years that I've seen, I think that people have looked at the priority of education, and when they're talking about the priority of education, what's balled up the process was when some other items got thrown into the mix. And then things got delayed and held up and eventually, you know, cut back last year anyway. And so that's why this bill specifically says that it can't include other any items other than appropriations for education, so that we don't get the those mixtures of things. Whether that's right or wrong, you know, I mean, there's a potential, like you say, and that's been part of the question, and all I can say is that we do have, you know, a number of letters in your packet that were given to you from districts that are supportive of this now because they see the problem of retaining teachers as being very severe, and one more reason to lose good teachers because you're having to pink slip them, and the insecurity of that is definitely something they want to try to avoid.
Any other questions?
Yes, go ahead, Chairman.
Perhaps Representative Jewell touched on it. I just don't know. How many times? It would seem to me that this bill might, if someone told me that this bill was the most popular unpassed bill in the history of the legislature, I would tend to believe that without too much checking because it's a challenge every year. And I'm brand new, but from the other side of the table, it's something we kai-ai about every single year. The teachers roar, the legislators try to deal with it. We always, I hear, promise to try to get it done early. It doesn't happen for good reason or no reason. But I'm just wondering, has this bill come up once or many times before, this type of bill? And if it has, what happened to it? Did comments similar to what Representative Jewell made and Representative Hawker made put it down, or what put the bullet in it if it's been here before? And if it hasn't been before, here before, why hasn't?
Through the Chair, Representative Kelly, yes, it has been here before. It was here as House Bill 19 in the 23rd legislature, and it might have been here before that. Previously, we have not had school boards and the associations and all signing on to the bill because they were concerned exactly with Representative Jewell's comment of, oh, if we wait until the last minute, might we get a little more money?
And that was the question. And the school boards have generally now come around to the opinion that early funding, when we can talk about the priority of education, when we can look at the situation, is what they would like to see. They would, of course, also like to see the highest level of education funding we can get, you know, the adequacy argument and everything. But there has not been, on the previous bills, support from school boards. And now there are letters of support in your packet there from school boards. And that's, I think, been a change of attitude, and that's why it's progressing, I think, as it is now.
Mr. Chairman, the back home during the Easter break, and it doesn't surprise me that perhaps at this point in time that those bodies would be for something like that. It would make their jobs seem easier. At the same time, the huge issue of dollars not going to the classroom because it's going to fund the public employee and teacher's retirement system, the tune of up to half of wages if we keep going the way we are. And that, regarding that particular area, they seem to be a lot quieter. And I'm just wondering, this one seems an easy one for them to support. Maybe a tough one to deliver, at least the record is it's a very tough one to deliver from this end of the street. And yet on an issue that we're grappling with on public employee retirement and retirement health care programs taking over time hundreds of millions out of the classroom, it's kind of quiet out there. And I guess that's not a question. It's just... this thing bothers me a little because of what Representative Cochran and Representative Jewell said, and my relative inexperience with just how hard this might be to deliver, or whether it ties our hands in some way. And so I appreciate your comments regarding the history of it because it's helpful. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Okay, to testify here, I have Mr. Jeans. Hey, James. Do you want to testify? Are you here for questions or what's
your... Mr. Chairman, I'm here to answer questions.
Okay. You're supportive of the bill, I said.
Mr. Chairman, we are supportive of the bill. For the record, Eddie Jeans, Director of School of Finance for the Department of Education.
Okay, very good. Any questions for Mr. Jeans? Mr. Jeans, I think you heard some of the concerns whether or not we could actually get the education budget done by March 5th. I guess you and I have worked together on the education budgets the past 4 years. I think we can do it. We did it this year. I think it is an admirable goal to try to get that done for nothing else, for the school district, so they know what their funding is on an early basis. Also, we heard that perhaps by holding out towards the end of the session, they could get more. Of course, you might comment that it could be less. So. Any thoughts on some of these concerns we've heard?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do understand the concerns about holding out till the end of the legislative session. I guess from my perspective, what this would do is put the legislature in a position of dealing with what the minimum level of funding would be for the K-12 education. The increase in the foundation program has to occur through a change in the base student allocation, which isn't always tied to our budget process. You know, when we develop our budget, it's based on the base student allocation that's in statute at that point in time. And then if the legislature comes along and increases that typically follows through in the form of a fiscal note. I know this year's been a little different than in the past, but that's the way it typically occurs. I think Representative Seaton pointed out some good issues for you all to consider, the notification of tenured teachers, and that gets back to school districts going through their budgeting process, similar to the budgeting process we go through here at the legislature. They're trying to make decisions on how to staff, what supplies they're going to purchase, and so on for the school districts next year. And without some indication from the legislature, if I was out in the field, I wouldn't be building the budget beyond what's in the statute as a minimum starting point. I believe, and I've heard this year, districts have gone beyond that. They started building their budgets at least at the governor's level until the legislative process got moving along and this body moved out the $70 million. So there's amendments going on at the local level to budgets right now. The other piece of the equation is local school districts are required under law to submit their budgets to local municipalities by May 1st. Quite often they don't know what they're going to receive. So that they're continuing to work on their budgets, and if we could provide them with some help at the local level, not only for the school boards but for the municipalities in their budgeting process, I think that that benefits all. So that's the department's position.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, if there's no one else to testify, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. The one amendment has been withdrawn. Any other questions, comments, amendments?
Do you want to prolong this?
No. Representative Foster.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move out HB 20 committee pushing out for the individual recommendation.
Okay. Any objections? Seeing none. The bill moves. House Bill 25 for a couple weeks. House Bill 20 will move out of committee. Okay, I think I've kept you guys long enough. I appreciate you staying. I know it's been a hard week. We've been doing double duty here at 9 o'clock and 1 o'clock or 1:30. And everybody have a great weekend. And we'll hit this again at our normal time at 1:30 on Monday. If there's nothing else, come for the committee. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Double Sunday.